Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. Ethan Bauer and Joseph Cassiopo are college roommates. They're both rising juniors at the University of Florida in Gainesville. They both grew up in South Florida before beginning their college careers there. Ethan in Pembroke Pines, Joseph in South Miami. Both of them are staying in Gainesville this summer attending classes. Ethan is a journalism major. Joseph is a double major in computer science and mathematics. They have a lot of time before they're faced with the reality of entering the full-time job market. They still have 2 years left for their undergraduate degrees, then a decision whether or not to continue on in school to get a graduate degree or go to work. But if you ask them about it like we did, it's clear they've thought about what comes next in 2 years' time.
I would likely have to go back to South Florida and live there.
That's Joseph Cassiopo. There is moving back in with his parents here in South Florida.
And just look for an opportunity. I don't see myself having an opportunity right away after college. If I do, that'd be awesome, and that would be my preference. But I would probably have to go to South Florida at least for a few months before I can settle in and have a job and get an apartment I like wherever I'm going to live. So I probably will have to go back.
He sounds almost resigned to returning to his hometown, and with a double major in computer sciences and mathematics, his hometown would be happy to have him. Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties have spent a lot of time and attention working to diversify their economies beyond the traditional areas of hospitality and real estate. Those efforts include financial services and biotech in Palm Beach County, pharmaceuticals and marine industries in Broward, and technology and aviation in Miami-Dade.
I like South Florida, and I like, you know, where I came from before, but...
That's Ethan Bauer, the journalism major at the University of Florida from Pembroke Pines.
I mean, I don't really, in my field of work with media and sports media in specific, it's like a place where you sort of have to build up to that, you know.
The two UF roommates from South Florida, Ethan Bauer and Joseph Cassiopo, still have a couple of years before we'll know if they will find their first professional working opportunities back where they're from or if they'll be drawn away by a job someplace else. That's the simplest form of the brain drain dilemma. Does a community provide the economic opportunities and quality of life to attract skilled workers?
I don't think there is a crisis in the area of brain drain. Let's just talk about brain mobility.
That's Jerry Haar. He's a business professor at FIU.
And if we talk about brain mobility, that means no different than Dell manufacturing its laptops, where you've got part of the design done in Austin, Texas. You've got, say, the motherboards manufactured in one locale in Asia, packaging done elsewhere. These are the realities, is that we're no longer living in a 1950s or 1960s or even 1970s static world, whether it's manufacturing or services. This is highly mobile.
Think about what impacts your mobility, your job, your quality of life. There's a lot packed into those two things, your education and training, your social network, your paycheck, your bills, your family, your health, your hobbies. That mobility has led more and more young adults to South Florida since the end of the Great Recession. The fastest growing age groups in the three-county area in South Florida since 2010 include 20 to 34-year-olds. Late career workers and retirees, people aged 55 and older, also outpaced the overall population growth. In fact, the only age group to lag was mid-career workers, people between 35 to 49 years old. These age groups barely grew in the 4 years after the end of the recession. The housing market may have rebounded. The job market certainly has come back. Tourism is at record highs and the local economy has grown. But the population of people considered in the middle of their prime working years and their prime earning years has not grown meaningfully in South Florida. Again, FIU business professor Jerry Haar.
Here we are in South Florida, and the three-legged stool happens to be international trade, tourism and hospitality, and retail. What do they have in common? Low skill, low wage, high turnover. And the bright side of that is it's a great first opportunity for a lot of individuals that have that are coming here, say, involuntarily, fleeing economic or political strife elsewhere, or they may have some other reasons, or they don't have the abilities, a skill set. That's great. We want to see people employed, and our forte is in the services sector. By the same token, there are other individuals that say, gee, I'm interested in studying engineering at FIU or University of Miami, and I'm thinking about becoming a systems engineer. And if you find that in your local community, the jobs are available for, say, programmers, but not systems engineers, you're going to go to where those opportunities are.
I see myself staying in Florida, or rather, I guess I should say South Florida.
This is Shanaz Miraj. She graduated this spring from Barry University with a Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Photography. She came to study at Barry from Bushkill, Pennsylvania, about 80 miles northeast of New York. She's staying here to start work.
For probably 5 to 10 years, it's just the opportunities that kind of, come my way via my craft. It's kind of phenomenal. I mean, if you think about it, Miami is... it's now growing, So they're getting a lot art-wise, which is definitely what I need to push myself. So for me, it seems kind of like the perfect fit.
With her degree in photography, she's confident she could go to New York, a natural choice given her field, and find work. But
I could find something there as well. But for me personally, I've grown a lot of roots here. I've met a lot of fantastic people. And if it's one thing I could say, the culture has so much more influenced, my art, which is kind of perfect.
She has a full-time job lined up at Barry University. So she's staying put. South Florida's gain is her hometown's drain.
My name is Jeff Lamore. I'm from Miami Shores, Florida. And I decided to go to Barry just to stay close to home. And I didn't really see the need to leave. So I just ended up at Barry. And currently right now, I'm a political science major, graduating senior.
What's next for Lamore with his political science degree and his Miami roots may take him away from his hometown for the first time.
I see myself right now, I'm applying to law school right now. Hopefully I'm able to continue school in June in one of those schools. And if I don't go to law school, I don't really see myself acquiring a job within my field. I don't really see that much political science opportunities here. And that's an issue for me because I really would want to stay in the field. I've studied this for 4 years. I got a 4-year degree in it. So leaving Miami might be an option.
You're going to college and graduating college just a few blocks from where you grew up. It would be a significant change if you were to pull up the roots and look for those opportunities elsewhere. How big of a change would it be for you to leave Miami, leave South Florida?
It would be a huge change because I was raised here and I wouldn't really know where to begin in another place. But at the same time, I would love to be in the field of political science. I love it. I love watching the debates. I love being involved, but I just do not see the opportunities here. So I'll be willing to leave because of that.
Lamar is sticking around this summer, at least. He's interning for Democratic congressional campaigns, but he admits
being in school for 4 years, I'm expecting, a paycheck.
And money certainly matters, of course. Marissa Dorsett also graduated from Barry University this month. She got her degree in international relations. She grew up in a lot of places, but considers the U.S. Virgin Islands home. Now, she plans on going to law school in January, but does not plan on returning to South Florida, no small part because of money.
I've kind of just been set on Central Florida. I just feel like with what Central Florida has to offer, the standard of living and the cost of living, especially just resonates with me. I just feel like Miami is too expensive for young adults, and they just make it unaffordable to afford bills, a car, and still a lifestyle. I think about how in Central Florida, granted Disney, Universal, and all those major corporations are there, you can still afford rent at $504 a month, while here down the street is almost $1,200. I just feel like Miami was more of just an opportunity. I never really saw myself living here. It's almost too congested for me, that's why. So I just feel like I can't live in such a congested city.
Miami and South Florida may not be able to keep Marissa Dorsett and her legal ambitions from leaving. So what makes a community magnetic? Well, that's still to come. One effort to reshape the landscape, literally, as a way to create communities skilled workers want.
I think we need to follow the money. And the money is following young talent. And talents are going to cities like Boston, Austin, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And we need to, I think, stop that trend.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. We're talking about brain drain, the phenomenon when communities lose skilled workers. There's no agreement whether South Florida suffers from it or not. It's really not a yes or no question either. Data from the Census Bureau indicates the population of young adults, people in their early 20s to early 30s, continues growing here. That's a good sign the local economy is attracting young workers. And we know South Florida, as a benefit of its geography and history, continues attracting immigrants from all over the world, especially Latin America. But data also shows it's tough to get an economic foothold here. Compared to global cities like New York, San Francisco, or London, Miami is cheap. But compared to other cities in the southeastern U.S. or in Florida, it's pretty expensive to live here. There's no shortage of studies showing renting or buying a home here takes a lot more than the median salary of around $48,000. Remember, creating an environment that attracts high-skilled workers rests on two characteristics. This is FIU Professor Jerry Haar again.
There are very talented individuals, great potential, that are going to remain in a locale or leave that locale based upon what the opportunities are in their vocational arena, as well as quality of life.
And for younger professionals, increasingly, that means urban city living. In the first decade of this century, more college graduates moved to downtown areas of America's 50 largest cities than to their suburbs. That's according to the University of California, Berkeley. South Florida's downtowns, especially the Brickell neighborhood in Miami, continue experiencing this kind of migration. There's lots of possible reasons to help explain this, namely economic and quality of life reasons.
We're currently at the corner of US 1 and 27th Avenue, and this is actually an exciting moment and opportunity for the Underline.
The Underline is a proposed 10-mile park stretching from Brickell southeast under the Metrorail tracks through Coconut Grove, Coral Gables, and South Miami. Meg Daly is the founder.
The Underline will have two trails, one for pedestrians, one for bicyclists, and we also have to improve these crosswalks. We have 32 of them. Many of them are dangerous. And in 2017, we're going to have a whole new fleet of trains.
Quieter, maybe?
A little bit quieter, not squeaking as much.
So we are standing on a piece of blacktop, essentially between the two Metrorail tracks, one going north into downtown, one going south into South Dade.
The Underline idea is an example of hoping to create amenities to improve communities through public spaces, addressing the quality of life issue for the region, including for high-skilled workers.
It's an exciting time in Miami.
Stuart Kennedy is the director of innovation at the nonprofit The Miami Foundation.
Miami's a young city, so some of those, we have some deficits, like the park space that is less than other places. But also there is a real feeling that you can have an impact here in Miami. You don't have to have the right last name like in New York or Chicago. You can come and raise your hand and you can be heard. Your voice can be heard. You can have a real impact on a significant world city.
The Miami Foundation is a supporter of the Underline Project as part of its Public Spaces Challenge. That's a grant program awarding money to community projects focused on parks and other public areas. It's an effort that's attracting both public and private money. The city of Miami increased its parks budget this year by 10%. Broward County's parks budget increased 7%. And this month, the company behind the massive Brickell City Center project, Swire Properties, donated $600,000 to the Underline.
I think we need to follow the money. And the money is following young talent. And talents are going to cities like Boston, Austin, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And we need to, I think, stop that trend. Like my children, they both live in New York. We need to bring this talent here because the businesses are chasing that talent. We're being outspent 2-1 on park amenities like the Underline with our competitive peers throughout the country. And so if we don't bring these amenities like walkability, bikeability, accessibility to park space and public transportation, we're going to continue to lose the talent that we need to build a thriving economy.
I think people are realizing the power of parks. People are seeing that this is really what their employees want, and they have to start thinking beyond the incentives that they can give within their business and think about what the city offers, because it is so mobile right now. The United States, the world is so mobile. People can go anywhere they want and do anything they want. So businesses have to figure out how they can work with their cities to create the type of place their employees want to live.
The Underline plan is estimated to cost $120 million for the 10-mile park. For that, supporters say it would create millions of dollars in additional property value and new real estate development. They also point out it's the kind of thing that can be a community magnet for people, companies, and jobs. Mara Sotsky hopes so. Her small business is Bottle and Bottega. It's an event space for wine and art parties. She rents what used to be a mattress store at 27th Avenue and US 1, next to the Metrorail tracks, next to where the Underline hopes to be.
I think our biggest challenge is that this Miami, you know, is typically known as a place where you go to vacation or, you know, stay for a minute and even live here, but eventually you will leave and sort of boomerang back to where you came from. And we very much are focused on people that are involved in the community, young professionals that live here and stay here and want cool, fun things to do here.
What are some of those new professional opportunities, though, that young workers are finding here? That's still to come as the Sunshine Economy, the battle against brain drain, continues. Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, the battle against brain drain. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. This month, more than 10,000 students earned their undergraduate degrees from South Florida colleges and universities. Another 10,000 earned graduate and professional degrees. Not all of these 20,000 new degrees will wind up being put to work in South Florida's job market, certainly. Some will go back to school, some will leave, some will stay. Statewide, most Florida college students are from Florida, almost 90%, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. So what about after college, after graduating? An analysis of LinkedIn alumni profiles online by the Brookings Institute found South Florida can brag it holds on to more than 50% of its college grads. That's quite a retention rate. So does it describe you? Have you stuck around your hometown finding job opportunities here? Did you come here for college only to stick around to begin to build your life? Let us know. Join the conversation on social media, Twitter and Facebook, at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. With us now is Fernando Figueredo, the Director of Career Services at Florida International University and the Assistant Director for Career Advisement at Nova Southeastern University, Emilio Lorenzo. Gentlemen, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Fernando, let's begin here. Does South Florida have a brain drain problem?
Well, first of all, Tom, thank you for inviting us and having us on the program. Very interesting subject and topic that we'll be discussing this morning. Well, it is an issue that's much more complex on the face, right? It depends on the industry, depends on where we look at as far as brain drain. We do find that in certain industries, like the technology industry, we have major multinational companies recruiting at our universities, especially at Florida International University, to take them to different places, the Googles, the Microsofts, the Ubers of the world.
Now, those companies are here, but they're not headquartered here.
That is correct. They have offices here in Miami, and they're not. Their headquarters is somewhere else. Therefore, their major opportunities are somewhere else.
And they're usually sales offices, not development offices.
They are sales offices, and so they're not really development offices. But we do also have a very large number of local companies and others like these major multinationals that do have some opportunities here in Miami. But the locals do have provide some opportunities.
Emilio, let me ask you, from NSU's perspective, are local industries creating opportunities for the thousands of NSU graduates that are now in the job market today compared to just a month ago when they were students?
You know, I do think so. And I think a lot of the points brought up were valid, especially in the technology industry, and that they're growing more, but you still have some of that young population leaving. Now, if you look at it during the light of the medical or healthcare industry, we're actually a hub where students are coming and wanting to stay in these locations. And, you know, we do a lot of local partnership, whether it's with hospitals. You know, we have a whole Baptist health program with our top nursing students going into those programs. You know, our NSU's dental program, medical program, pharmacy. You know, a lot of these students' top choices is to go to residency or to get full-time jobs down here in these areas. You also look at other areas within the Latin American entertainment industry, and we're a hub here, whether from internationally or other universities coming down here to either practice marketing or other techniques. And I think that's where it's seeing the brain drain from different scales or looking at certain light kind of gives you the bigger picture of what's happening.
You mentioned a couple industries which are not traditional tentpole industries of the local economy. You didn't mention hospitality or tourism. You didn't mention real estate. You mentioned healthcare and entertainment.
And hospitality is still a growing industry. And I think, you know, there are always going to be opportunities down here locally. But I think looking at where the brain drain issues are happening, it a lot of times is those technology where you have these students who are leaving for maybe bigger companies or located in different areas, but also because of the lifestyle that is down here. You know,
lifestyle brings up the cost of living. And we heard earlier from a number of students who have gone to school here or who grew up here and are in Gainesville at UF and undergraduate said they're put off by the cost of living potential here in South Florida. Fernando, how does the local industry play a role in that in trying to get those young professionals into their career paths?
You know, and that is a very interesting point of view to actually analyze and or issue to analyze. When you look at the what the local government institutions are doing and as working together with the corporate environment here in Miami, the Beacon Councils of the World, the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce.
The local economic development groups.
Yeah, yeah. They're working very close with Mayor Carlos Jimenez, who leads the One Community, One Goal initiative, and with the Academic Leaders Council, that's the presidents of the different universities led by President Rosenberg at FIU. They're looking at what can they do to actually provide some opportunities for housing as well as increasing other employment opportunities. So for example, you mentioned the hospitality industry. Mm-hmm. Well, we know that about 300 to 400 students will graduate from FIU next fall, and they just 300 or 400 just graduated in the hospitality industry from FIU. Many of those initial jobs are not very high paying jobs. Right. We know that. So we're working with the hotel industry, working with the restaurant industry, trying to make sure that they provide the best possible opportunities for salaries as well as benefits so that that can support our students here at the local market.
That kind of compensation, Emilio, gets down to skill set. If you have a very highly desirable skill set in this job market with an unemployment rate nationally of 5%, in some locations in Fort Lauderdale, I know it's below 5%, that means that you can get a higher salary. You perhaps may be able to negotiate better benefits if you have that right skill set, even as a young professional. So what are those skills the local industry wants? What's the demand telling you?
Well, it goes a little bit of balance between the hard and the soft skills. You know, I think before we even started, we were having a discussion of some of the skills that NACE, that National Organization for College and Employers, what are they looking for? Problem-solving skills, you know, being able to work in a team, being able to solve individual problems while still being able to communicate effectively, articulate yourself. But where are students doing that? You know, I think that they need to be leveraging their experiences throughout the 4 years so that they don't graduate and see these opportunities like, wow, this is going to be perfect cost of living, quality of care, everything like that. But, you know, I don't know if I have 1 to 3 years of experience. And so that's where it goes back to that internship. What are they doing throughout those 4 years to make themselves marketable, to be eligible for those type of opportunities? Because if you don't have those skills or you don't have anything to sell yourself with, you know, how are you going to make that next step forward?
That list, Fernando, that Emilio refers to talks about critical thinking, problem solving, communications, collaboration, leadership. There's not algebra or global history on
yeah,
here.
Right.
Those are not skills that local industry says we need to have.
Absolutely. What's happening, and there's been a transition in the past few years away from focusing on the academic discipline that the students is leaving with and focusing on those soft skills. We're actually becoming very important skills for the job place, for the job market nowadays, the problem-solving skills, making sure that the student can take information, analyze it, develops potential solutions, and then implementing those solutions.
Yeah.
Teamwork, leadership, communication, those are skills that are required more and more nowadays.
And those are skills that students can get through internships, via internships. Are local companies, which are traditionally in this economy, small companies, mom and pop shops, sole proprietorships, are they providing those internship opportunities for FIU students?
Well, actually, that's one of the reasons why the Talent Development Network was formed. and that's again a collaboration between the Beacon Council, the Chamber, and the universities in order to create internship opportunities for our students at the local level. And the focus is actually those small and medium-sized companies, because the large ones, you know, Emilio mentioned Baptist, FPNL, American Airlines, et cetera, those large ones, they already have an institutionalized program for internships. It's the middle and the smaller companies, medium and small-sized companies, that actually don't realize how much support an intern can give them.
Yeah.
And so that's what the Talent Development Network has been set up for.
Dr. Fernando Figueredo is the Director of Career Services at Florida International University, and Emilio Lorenzo is the Assistant Director for Career Advisement at Nova Southeastern University. Thanks to both of you for joining us here on the Florida, on the Sunshine Economy, rather, on this Monday.
Thank you for having us.
Still to come here today, matching the supply and demand of workers and skills in South Florida.
Miami has become a global city without a blueprint and by accident. How does Miami now, as a metropolitan area of 5.5, soon to be over 6 million people, economic output, you know, the size of Singapore or Hong Kong, how does it build an economy to match the kind of people it's attracting?
We're back on the Sunshine Economy on WLR, and I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking about brain drain, the idea that a local economy can lose its young and high-skilled workers. In April, Florida saw the second largest increase in new jobs in the nation, 31,000 new jobs created statewide. Nationwide, the unemployment rate is 5%, but for those with at least a college bachelor's degree, it's less than half that. Richard Florida is a leading thinker about cities and innovation. He's professor at the University of Toronto and a visiting fellow at FIU. He splits his time between Toronto and Miami Beach.
Probably more than most regions, Greater Miami or South Florida has been fixated on this idea of brain drain. And it's true. The most talented, the most ambitious young people typically leave where they grew up. That's true of Miami. That's true of New York City. That's true of Boston, even though it's home to Harvard and MIT. That's true to the San Francisco Bay Area. It's true of everywhere. But the better way to look at it is that the real concept that I think is important, and it's really important for Greater Miami and South Florida, is a concept called brain circulation. This concept was introduced by a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, Annalise Exanian, in her detailed studies of the Silicon Valley and the Bay Area technology complex. And what she found is, yes, people leave San Francisco, people leave Silicon Valley, but at the same time, people from India, particularly China, these technology diasporas were coming there, and people were then moving back. They were going back to India and China and developing startups, and they were creating this incredible wave of circulation. Well, when it comes to South Florida, I mean, what's quite amazing is the fact that, you know, it's probably the largest destination for immigrants of any metro. I mean, New York and L.A. are bigger because they're bigger cities, but in terms on a per capita basis or per population basis, and it also gets all, but South Florida gets all of this brain circulation from people who come there, not just as transient visitors, but as part-time residents, what we used to think of as snowbirds. And I mean, as any person in South Florida and Greater Miami knows, the people who are coming to the winter are no longer, you know, people on death's door. These are some of the most sophisticated, interesting, academic, innovative, entrepreneurial. So I think the better way to think about South Florida now is this incredible center of brain circulation.
Why is that important to a regional economy?
Well, I think, you know, look, Miami has many, South Florida have many strengths and weaknesses. There are, you know, you can make the argument that it's still too much of a service economy, still too dependent on hospitality and tourism, still too much dependent on real estate. It doesn't have the innovation or high-tech economy of a place like San Francisco or Seattle or Austin. But what it does have in its favor is a place that people from all over the world want to come to visit or come to live. And it's not, I mean, obviously, a lot of this is driven by Miami's particular role as the hub, you know, the global hub of Latin America and the Caribbean. But, you know, as someone who spends nearly half the year now in Miami Beach, in Greater Miami and South Florida, I know all the people I run into who happen to be there for 3 months or 6 months or 2 weeks, and it's some of the most innovative and interesting people from all over the world. You know, the way we look at it is a lot of kids leave Miami to go to college. But Miami is home to about 450,000 full-time and part-time college students. It's the eighth largest college town in the United States. And what's really interesting is most people think, well, the kids leave after graduating college. It may be that a lot of kids from Miami leave after graduating college. But in fact, over two-thirds of the kids who graduate from University of Miami, FIU, Florida International, Miami-Dade, I can go on, two-thirds of them stay. It has a 67% Greater Miami, the metro, a 67% retention rate. That's better. Hold on. But that's better than Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Philadelphia, or San Diego. So the point is that Miami is retaining many more brains than it's sending away.
A lot of attention in South Florida has been paid to matching a skill set that local industry is desirous of beyond the traditional tent poles of the local economy, real estate, and hospitality. Does that run the danger, however, of customization of education to fit a demand function in terms of the supply coming out of colleges and universities?
It's kind of a dumb idea, to be quite honest. You know, if you think about it, it's what you want in a local economy is to be innovative, to do new things. You want to train people to do new things. If Pittsburgh had trained kids, and I lived in Pittsburgh and I taught at Carnegie Mellon for nearly 20 years. If Pittsburgh had trained people to enter the steel industry, and it did some of that, don't get me wrong, it did that wonderfully. But Carnegie Mellon, where I taught, was a pioneer in software and computer science. Now, when Pittsburgh had to remake itself, when the steel industry collapsed, what did it do? Carnegie Mellon in information technology, software engineering, computer science, I just read today, Carnegie Mellon and Uber are introducing the first round of Uber self-driving cars. I used to see these little robotic cars drive around in the parking lot, and people are like, what the hell's going on there? So look at San Francisco and Silicon Valley, Stanford, the University of California, Berkeley. Look at MIT in Greater Boston. They weren't pumping out kids to work in the local boot and shoe industry in the 1940s. They were training people in computer science and high-tech industries.
So are you seeing this strategy as a mistake locally?
I think to some degree you want to make sure that your community colleges, your two-year institutions are very well articulated to your local demand, but you need a mixed strategy. For your premier, and I think one of the things that we've lacked, that where we've seen the University of Miami going and FIU going, is more emphasis on cutting-edge science, more emphasis on cutting-edge engineering, more emphasis on high-tech and all of these things, which will push the economy forward. I think the idea is, yeah, you have to do some of the stuff that's very much a part of your local labor market. But the fact of the matter is Miami needs to build an economy. I mean, you know, I've been studying this for the past couple of years. And one of the things we know is that Miami has become a global city without a blueprint and by accident. You know, there's never been a strategy. It's benefited from this wonderful location. It's at the tip of Florida, wonderful weather, attracted people who wanted to be there. 40% of its residents come from other countries, whether it's the Latin American, Caribbean, or Europe, or wherever. It has this great airport and great port, but there was never a strategy. So it has lots of people and an undeveloped economy. The real question for South Florida is, what will this economy become? You know, it didn't have a steel industry. It didn't have an auto industry. It didn't have an electronics industry. It grew on tourism and hospitality and its wits and real estate. How does Miami now, as a metropolitan area of 5.5, soon to be over 6 million people, economic output, you know, the size of Singapore or Hong Kong, how does it build an economy to match the kind of people it's attracting?
While Miami has significant industry, and that industry is service-oriented, of course, in the tourism and in the real estate industry, it doesn't have large cornerstone corporations and has really lacked that kind of Fortune 500 spinoff environment that Silicon Valley has had, that Dallas has had, of course, with the energy and with banking, that New York has had with multiple industries, media and financial, that even Minneapolis has with the agribusiness industry that it has. How much of that has been a governor or could be a governor moving ahead as the area continues to try to develop into this global economic power?
I think it's a cost and a benefit. I mean, you look at one industry towns like Pittsburgh and steel or Detroit and autos, when those industries collapsed, you know, Pittsburgh had 900,000 people in its heyday and now has 300,000 people. Detroit was way over 1 million. I think it's 700,000 or 800,000 people now. You know, New York is different. It's had an incredibly diverse economy back for centuries. But I think Miami is the place that's really making itself out of nothing. Now, it does have big companies. It has the big cruise lines. It has the big hospitality and tourism aspect. It has some big real estate companies. But the thing is, it now has the ability to build its economy in all sorts of new directions. And I think there's two things. One, I think there's been an emphasis on startups. That's been great. Miami is creating more startups. It's climbing up the ranks. No, it's far behind the Silicon Valley or San Francisco or Austin, but it's getting better. But I think the bigger thing is, how do you make that tourism and hospitality industry the best it could be? You know, and my analog is, when Detroit and Pittsburgh and Boston and New York were built, it was not only the rich robber barons that prospered from manufacturing. We actually, as a country, 100 years ago, during the New Deal, the Great Depression, said we're going to make manufacturing jobs. Henry Ford said we have to have a $5 day so that people working in the factories can buy the cars they're producing. So we created manufacturing jobs as good blue-collar fit. My dad had one. My dad had a seventh-grade education. He had one of these jobs in an eyeglass factory. You know, put his two boys, bought a house, put his three kids to college. These tourism and hospitality jobs are the exact analog today. They're terribly low-paying. They're insecure. People are treated pretty poorly in most cases. They're high-turnover jobs. Imagine in Miami, if we could develop a strategy using our 2- and 4-year institutions to making those tourism and hospitality jobs higher paying but more innovative, just like they did in the factories, involve the workers in work teams and work groups, have them seen as sources of innovation. And in fact, the most recent studies coming out of MIT suggest that in retail tourism and hospitality, when you engage workers in their jobs, when you pay them better, when you have them stick around and not move from job to job, when they have a longer term tenure in that company, they become a source of innovation. Customer service improves, customers like the company better, innovation goes up, productivity and profits rise. So I think Miami is a very good laboratory for thinking about the future of hospitality and tourism, not as a low-wage-driven occupation, but as a middle-class, family-supporting set of occupations, which actually lead to a more innovative and more technology-driven, better customer service, more profitable tourism and hospitality industry. And I think that's got to be part of the mix.
FIU visiting Professor Richard Florida. Next month, he will release a new study examining Miami's creative economy, including a look at attracting and keeping high-skilled workers. Still to come, Miami's assets and learning from the mistakes of others.
Someone once said to me that Miami's a little bit like a bathtub with the drain open. It keeps the water keeps coming in and it flows out over the edges and it goes down the drain. I mean, it goes in all directions.
This is The Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. South Florida is a community and economy of extremes, income and housing being just two of those. There's a lot of wealth here, but plenty of poverty, too. Rip Rapson is the president of the Kresge Foundation, based in Troy, Michigan. The foundation's financial purse came from the company that evolved into Kmart. Its namesake founder had a mansion on Miami Beach. Today, the organization's mission is, quote, expanding opportunities in America's cities. It has several projects here in South Florida. Now, Rapson and the foundation bring here a perspective from their hometown near Detroit and the big struggles Motor City has experienced in trying to rebuild its community and economy.
Well, you know, in many ways, Miami, I think, is well on its way to getting there, if I may say. I mean, it is a community that reflects the vibrancy of the cultural and historical traditions of our country. It's a community that is increasingly filled with the building blocks of opportunity, whether it's educational opportunity or economic opportunity or transit mobility. It's a place, I think, that is increasingly centered around institutions that are welcoming and democratic in all ways, whether those are arts institutions or even business institutions. And it's obviously a community in which sort of the next generation economy is open to all residents who want and are able to participate.
One of the challenges that Miami has had in terms of growing its brand domestically for the United States is opportunity for early career or new positions because of a real lack of corporate concentration here in South Florida. Do you see it the same way?
From an outsider, I think if there is any line on Miami, it is a little bit the sort of two-tier economy. It's the idea that you have this extraordinary vibrancy of tourism and cultural attraction and folks coming in and investing from other parts of the world in exciting ways. But I do think that for those of us who aren't from your community, there is a sense that there is not the kind of the diversification and the stability across multiple sort of lines of economic activity that provide these kinds of pathways of opportunity where you can start as a nurse and move up to be a supervisor and ultimately move into management in a hospital organization, for example. But on the other hand, my sense is I've come back to Miami over these last number of years fairly frequently, is that that's emerging, that you're diversifying in terms of healthcare, in terms of technology, in terms of entertainment. I think in many ways the narrative may not yet be caught up to you.
And what are the influences of that narrative? Not necessarily solely for Miami, but for any city as it's trying to grow into a sticky economy, an economy that doesn't have brain drain or doesn't lose, you know, high-paying jobs and multiple companies to other locations, either domestically in the U.S. or internationally.
Well, I think one is simply stability over time. Miami has been such a dynamic economy and such a dynamic sort of socioeconomic place over the last decade that I think it's hard for people outside of Miami to sort of get a fix on it. Someone once said to me that Miami is a little bit like a bathtub with the drain open. You know, it keeps the water keeps coming in and it flows out over the edges and it goes down the drain. I mean, it goes in all directions. And I think he meant it in a complimentary way, that there is so much change going on in this community all the time. That I think, it's hard to pin down a narrative that seems to characterize you at any moment in time.
With the other communities your foundation works with, specifically Detroit, and I know you have a close relationship with the city of Detroit and what it's gone through over the past generation, really, what are some of the efforts that you see are applicable here in South Florida that can work toward creating a community that proves desirable for employees and provides those pathways to prosperity for a larger number of people?
First, the extent to which you have created a vibrancy in your arts and culture scene, I think you should never underestimate. Whether it's Wynwood or whether it's the new institutions popping up along Biscayne, I mean, it is just extraordinary to watch. And you only have to walk outside any evening in Miami and see the people spilling out of concert halls and art galleries and museums to understand what an extraordinary asset or set of assets you now have. I think we often tend to push off to the margin issues of arts and culture as a determinant of long-term social and economic vibrancy, but I think you have really cracked that code in a really powerful way. And it's not just Art Basel. I mean, it's everything about this community that sort of speaks to, a diversified and healthy and dynamic way of thinking about the next generation of our nation. Second is the diversity of the population. I mean, it is so fascinating to walk the streets of Miami, even after walking the streets of a place like New York or San Francisco or Chicago, and see sort of a mini United Nations around every corner. The music, the food, the art, the culture, the languages, I think make for a community that seems to both reflect our nation's future and in many ways reflect the very best of what our nation has to offer right now. There are a couple of things that we've learned in Detroit, however. It is perhaps first that sort of a monoculture of any industry is not healthy. Obviously in Detroit, that's all about the auto industry. But here again, to an observer who may not be the most astute observer, but one from the outside, my sense is that the sort of the tourism and entertainment industries here in Detroit, in Miami, are so dominant that efforts to diversify, even in small business and in neighborhood-based economies, is going to be important to your future. You can't just build a downtown economy. I'm not sure Miami is trying to do that, but certainly in Detroit, you can't do that. You've got to make sure that you pivot into neighborhoods and ensure that there's the kind of residential and economic and social political stability in neighborhoods that any great community needs. I think if there are other ways that Miami could move forward, it's perhaps in the sort of the more ambiguous area of how you problem solve. One of the things that we've learned in Detroit is that no single sector can really take on the complexity and the intractability of issues of education and economic growth and all of the other issues that any modern American city has to face. And what we've tried to do is stitch together unusual combinations of the public sector, of the private sector, of the philanthropic sector, of the nonprofit sector, so that each can sort of do what it's best at. So, for example, we created a new riverfront development over the last decade that was led by philanthropy and closely followed by the private sector, and only at the very tail end did the public sector come in. I don't know enough about sort of the Miami circumstance to know, but I can suggest that I think the most successful places in America are those where there's a more of a, almost a distributive leadership model, where the public sector is not sort of command and control over all decisions, but increasingly is working with the private sector interests and the philanthropic sector interests to crack problems in very different ways.
Detroit clearly has had a very tough reputation for a number of years now, and it got even more difficult, of course, during the municipal bankruptcy. The work that you've done there, have you been able to identify, as Detroit's been able to begin to rebuild itself, begin to rebuild its finances and business acumen, what impact that has had on its ability to attract business from outside the area to come back in?
That's such an interesting question. You know, when I came to Detroit 10 years ago, my wife sort of wept for the first year because it was such a tough climate. There was so little investment going into the city. There were such high levels of need and distress. And now, 10 years later, you walk down the Central Business District or along the main arterial, and you see cranes and activity and kids and families on the street enjoying the community. So at one very sort of anecdotal, soft level, you can just see it. You can feel the sense of hopefulness and optimism that people, I think, feel every day as the markets sort of find their way back to Detroit. Second is that their markets are finding their way back to Detroit. We have seen everything from residential to commercial to industrial to other forms of investment move back into Detroit. It's taken a while. You've got to kind of rejigger return expectations at first until the market catches up with you. But interestingly, Tom, third, we actually commissioned a survey last fall to ask exactly this question in sort of post-bankruptcy Detroit. What do CEOs from across the country outside of Detroit think of Detroit? And it's actually almost surprising how bullish American CEOs are about Detroit. About three quarters of them felt that Detroit was a place they would like to invest. And almost all of them felt that Detroit was a place that was recovering and would be in much sounder financial health, you know, in the future. Although it was interesting, we were surprised to find that only about 16% of the CEOs we surveyed actually knew that Detroit had actually emerged from bankruptcy. So,
is that right?
Yeah, we got to do a better job of getting our line out.
Miami does not suffer from that reputation. Rip Rapp's in there, the president of the Kresge Foundation. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Join the conversation online, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks again for listening.